This episode contains discussions of adult themes, including abuse and substance use. These elements are included to authentically tell Tommy's story and reflect his lived experiences. Listener discretion is advised. You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
Thomas Lloyd Young, birthday was February 19th, 1961. I was born in Sacramento, California.
Tommy Young is a kind-hearted Marine veteran, husband, father, and grandfather. He was raised in West Virginia and went through some tough times dealing with learning disabilities, bullying, and abuse. His siblings, however, were always there for him. They've watched out for him his entire life to make sure he knew what to do and was always taken care of. After high school and a career-ending football injury, he headed to California, where he made some great memories. Upon his return to West Virginia, he signed on with the Marines and became the top recruiter in the state. He soon welcomed his pride and joy into the world, his son, Jesse Dalton. Tommy has worked hard his entire life to become the best version of himself. That personal growth led him to marrying Stella, his wonderful, devoted wife. His life has not always been easy, but Tommy has faith in Jesus and a positive attitude that has carried him through. His story begins with his parents.
Dad was in the Air Force, and they had traveled all around the world with my four brothers and sisters. And then when he got stationed at Travis Air Force Base near Sacramento, I was born. And when I was 2 years old, Dad retired from the Air Force, and we moved to Kenna, West Virginia. It took a couple of years for our house to be built in Sissonville. That was where Papa Young, Mama Young, I spent quite a bit of time with Mama and Papa. Love my Mama and Papa. Loved them to death. Mama was Jessie Young. She was actually a Wilkinson. A lot of my cousins were Wilkinsons. Jessie and Claude Dalton Young. They had a farm for a lot of years. Dad was always working. Mom, when we first got to West Virginia, wasn't working first few years, but Dad was always gone, working overtime and extra hours, always involved in the band boosters and helping build ball fields and do different things. I didn't see Dad that much. Earliest memory I have is 5 or 6 years old. I was playing softball, t-ball. Dad coached me a little bit when we were young. But after he got involved in boosters and work and president of the Little League, he started Sissonville Little League when I was 11 years old, which was a big deal. And maybe we'd had to drive 15 minutes into Charleston to go play baseball.
Tommy's siblings were hugely influential in his childhood and throughout his life.
The sister closest to me is 5 years older. My older brother, I think, is 13 or 14 years older. My brothers and sisters loved me, hugged me, told me how much they loved me, bragged on me, told me how to dance, taught me, you're going to have to kiss a girl and this is how you have to do it. You know, so my sisters did a lot of raising me and get me unscared of going to dances and going places. Love my brothers and sisters. Donald is Donald Abraitis Young Jr. Linda was Linda Ann Young, Ronnie Ronald Lee Young, and Susan was Susan Elizabeth Young. I always say Donnie and Ronnie, but neither one of them liked that because it was like Mommy, Donnie, Ronnie, and Tommy. So it was, you didn't holler for me. I didn't hear you holler for me. I thought you were hollering for Ronnie, you know, but there was a lot going on. I mean, we lived a half a mile from the high school. The high school just opened in like 65. So a lot of students getting on buses, off buses, walking by our house and coming over to our house after basketball games, football games, baseball games. It was very busy. It was a lot of fun. I was definitely the tag along. Susan was 5 years older than me. So by the time I got to 12, I went from five siblings to being the only child. It was awesome, especially when you're the baby and you're spoiled rotten anyway. It was good. But all my brothers and sisters are very successful. I was the only one without a college degree. And I did okay for not having a four-year degree. So somebody taught me something along the way. Most of it was Mom, but a lot of it was Susan. Susan was very explicit in what I needed to do. My brothers and sisters were not going to let me be a failure. No way, shape, or form. But my brothers and sisters after 11, 12 aren't home anymore. Donnie was going to Vietnam. I wouldn't get off the TV. Mom would tell me I had to go to bed. And I'd cry, throw a fit. And I said, no, I'm watching these names. I'm going to see if Donnie's name on one of them if he died. And my sister Linda went to Marshall University, cried my eyes out. It's only an hour away, but I thought she was leaving me for good. And then Ronnie, just a couple years later, went to the Lucerne Seminary up in Michigan, and he was gone. And then Susan goes up there with Ronnie. And it's like everything just kept leaving. But every one of them, through those years, Susan called to check on me. Ronnie sent me a Columbia 10-speed. Linda would send me gifts. Donnie would call and check on me, see if I needed anything. I got cassette tapes from them. I'd go anywhere. And if there was trouble, and I was beating somebody in pool and done took $300 off of them, these three guys said they're going to whip me. One of the guys in the back of the bar said, guys, I don't think you want to do that. That's Donnie Young's baby brother. So they're getting ready to whip me. But because they knew my brothers and sisters somewhere along the line, I was just covered, literally got away from so much. It was unreal.
Thanks to his siblings, Tommy remained close to his family despite some real conflict with his parents.
We were the all-American family, and we're still the all-American family. Dad and Mom, they were strict up until I was 12. Then they were both working, and I was the only one home. Mom didn't want me growing up and being disrespectful to others and just wanted me to make the right decisions. And a lot of times at a young age, I wasn't able to make right decisions. I was dyslexic. I had learning disabilities, and they didn't give you medication back in those days. So I got a lot of whippings and stuff up to 10, 11, 12. After that, I was a pretty big boy. And I said, Mom, don't hit me with that switch ever again, all that kind of stuff. But Mom loved me to death. She hugged me, kissed me all the time. But Mom was a Southern Belle. Dad had put her through a lot, but Dad was a mean dude. There was always women. I would walk in, whether it was 8, 12, 14, 17. I'd walk into her house. He'd be with another woman. I remember knowing something was wrong. I knew Mom had some mental problems, but I didn't learn of them until after I was 20 years old. I didn't even learn that some of them until I was 50 years old when Mom told me she was in an insane asylum. She left Dad, got pregnant with my sister. Dad, he left her and went to San Francisco. So Dad had to drive to Colorado and get her. Now Dad has a stepdaughter. But until I was 19 years old, Linda was my sister. I didn't know any better. Now Linda will tell you different. Oh, yes, you did. You didn't love me as much. I love my sisters. They're my sisters. I don't have a stepsister. It's the way it is.
As Tommy said, the 1970s were the best time of his life, and he lived his wild child days to the fullest.
And then, of course, the 70s kicked in, and I was 13, 14, 15. Oh, it was party central from that point on, but no, it was a different world back then. I was 14 years old, sitting in a room with Kiss. They're still in their makeup, changing clothes, doing hits. It's just crazy. And people are like, hey, man, how'd you get in here? I said, man, that guy said he wanted an ounce. We brought him an ounce. Oh, dude, it's good, too. You know, so they let us stay. Steve Anderson, his mom ran Ticketmaster at the Civic Center. So we always had four tickets to anything. I went to Elvis Presley. I mean, went to everything. And then afterwards, we knew where they stayed, how you get there. They blocked one way, but they didn't know there was another way. And we would just wander around there, hang out a little bit, inch closer, walk in. Everybody's messed up. What are they going to do? Nobody wants to beat you. So they're like, hey, man, where'd you get there? Can you get me some? You know, it was crazy. The 70s had to be the best decade ever.
Tommy made some great memories, gained lifelong friendships, and learned many valuable lessons during his teenage and young adult years.
I was always playing sports. I loved the piano. I did it for a number of years. And I loved big league football, baseball. I started in all three sports. I lettered in all the sports. I had a high school sweetheart that I dated through high school. That was the marriage in Charleston. We're married for 6 months. And then I went to Marine Corps boot camp and she sent me divorce papers in Marine Corps boot camp. Anyway, my high school sweetheart, we went our separate ways. But my buddies, Mike Jones, Mark Davis, Chuck Kissam, Danny Kelly, Jeff Kelly, Bobby Bogus, John Bogus, Donald Bogus. I mean, I'd go on and on and on and on. It was just one crew that stuck together for like 10 years and had a lot of fun. My senior year, I got an award that for 12 years, I never missed a day of school. From first grade to 12th grade, I never missed a day of school. Everybody said, Young, you're a freaking liar. That's bull. And I said, dude, it's because the girls I had either dated or flirted with were taking the roles from the classes to the office. I said, hey, mark me down. And I'd run out the door, get in the car, and go to skip day. Well, they had already said I was there. So I got away with so much. My brothers and sisters set it up for me because they were like the best students in their class. Well, I was the worst. I was the one that teachers were like, hey, put that out before you come to the door, you know. Oh, okay, whatever, teacher, you know. And we had so much fun doing all kinds of stuff, hunting, fishing, four-wheelers, sleigh riding on inner tubes down mile-long hills doing 70 miles an hour. I mean, there would be like 100 of us. And we all went to the same location and did the same thing. That's when we went against all rules. We would take tires and put them in a pile and set them on fire. Well, you can't set tires on fire anymore. We ruined it for you. But we kept warm. It could be minus 20, but we were warm. I had fun playing sports. My senior year, I was captain of football, basketball, baseball, and we lost a lot of games. We had a coach that nobody wanted to play for. And at one point in football, we won the second game of my sophomore year and won the second to last game of my senior year and had the nation's longest losing streak at 26 straight games. It sucks, but the thing about it is the 15 guys that are on that team, when you look at it today, they're all successful. We knew how to put up with adversity. What else could you put us through? Well, I left high school and went to West Virginia Institute of Technology, which was like one of the top five engineering schools in the nation for a long time. And the counselors told me that this kid needed to go to college. I got a sports scholarship to play football, to be a punter and a kicker on the football team. And went up and had a wonderful time being a part of a really fun and good-hearted team. And the pro scouts were looking at me for punting. Everybody else was like at a 36-yard average. I had a 46-yard average. I mean, loved it. Could kick the ball out of the end zone back when most people couldn't kick it to the end zone. If I was kicking off for the opening, I'd try to kick a field goal. I wanted to put it to the uprights on the kickoff. One time I did. And then second game, I got hurt, pulled my groin almost completely in two. The four pro scouts left and never showed back up. Called my brother in Southern California at Manhattan Beach. I said, Donnie, can I come out there and get a job? Can I come live with you? He said, come on out. To that point, Donnie and I had not spent a lot of time together. He was away, Vietnam, moving, Southern California. My whole life, he was always gone. So I didn't know him that well. And then come to find out, Donnie and I were like exactly alike. It was so funny having years apart and being exactly alike.
The next stop for Tommy was California, where he fully embraced the beach bum lifestyle.
I was going to grow my hair, grow a beard, be a beach bum, work construction, hang out with the surfer dudes. Loved the surfer dudes. The Strand is awesome. We live right in the middle of it. 26 miles long. It's like 7 yards wide. And people run, ride bikes, put on their bikinis, ride on the rollerblades. I would be standing on the side of the Strand with my 10-speed, my brother's 10-speed. And somebody would walk up to me and go, "Man, I just heard you talking. Where are you from?" I'm like, "West Virginia." "No way. My girlfriend loves the way you talk." And I would get invited to a party and drinks everywhere. 100 people show up and it was amazing. But David, one of the guys that smoked and all that kind of stuff, David said, "Hey, man, you want to come to a party tonight? There's going to be like 20 or 25 of us. We're going to listen to some music." I said, "Sure." So I showed up and they owned all this property and was like, "These are the only people in LA that have this many house seats, if you will." And we walk in. I brought a fifth of Jack Daniels, sit down at a table. "All right, we got Jack Meister." You know, somebody came over and we're sitting there talking. And they said, "Well, we're going to get up and play a little bit of music, but am I going to go first or you going to go first?" And it was Cyndi Lauper talking to Tom Petty. He was awesome. He was awesome to party with. I mean, it was crazy. I was like, no, I'm good. "Oh, come on. You're from West Virginia, aren't you? I thought you was a hillbilly." It was like being with friends back in high school. It was truly like being with friends. And then when I moved to Long Beach, I was working construction down there for like the next 9 months. And a friend let me get a little apartment with him. And he lived right on the beach. One of the guys I ran around with was JB. And JB, 7 detailing shops. And his dad owned 7. And talk about spoiled rotten. But we just got along. We boxed together. We played basketball together. We did everything together. And now, JB's girlfriend, she had burns on the back of her legs. She loved me. JB always made fun of her for having a burns on the back of her legs. I said, "JB, leave her alone. She's gorgeous, dude. What are you talking about?" "Man, don't you worry about it. She should have never stood in that house and got burnt. They look awful." He was mean to her. But she always, "Where's my West Virginia boy? Come here, Tommy Younger. I got somebody I want to introduce you to." One of the guys I ran around with was JB. We boxed together. We played basketball together. We did everything together. Well, his wife was a backup singer for Donna Summers. One night, they had a concert at Long Beach. And they said, "You going?" And we were sitting around their party. I said, "No, I messed up. I'm not going." And later on, about 1 o'clock in the morning, she comes walking through the door and she goes, "Where's my friend? Come here, Tommy Younger. I got somebody I want to introduce you to." Donna Summers hugged me for 60 seconds. It was, sit there, sit down at the table, ask me about where I was from, where I'd been, everything. And I'm sitting here going, Donna Summers is sitting right beside me telling me how good looking I am. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I love you to death. It was just fun. Fun stuff. All over the place. I was down at Sunset Boulevard, sitting there looking at cars. Car pulled up. And there was a fire hydrant, and he pulled up close to it. The guy tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, "Ah, don't leave, Scary. He knows how to drive." Burt Reynolds. He said, "My goodness, where'd you get the accents?" And I said, "West Virginia." I said, "But I got a story." He said, "What's the story?" I said, "My mom's from Selma, Alabama. My dad's from Jackson County, West Virginia. This is what you get." And he said, "You just down here?" I said, "No, my brother's in the store here waiting on me." And he goes, "Well, I got to run. Good to meet you." Get in his car. He pulled off. Donnie walked out. And he goes, "Bro, who you waving at?" I said, "Burt Reynolds." He said, "Yeah, right." I said, "Dude, I just sit here and talk to him for 10 minutes. He said, "No way." I was up at the Hollywood sign. So I went up for myself at a 280Z. T-tops. Took the tops out. Listening to Waylon Jennings. And I get up there by myself. I'm standing underneath the Hollywood sign. That's when I fell asleep under that sign. I took my 280. I'd never been to Sacramento, see where I was born. So I went up Route 1, along the ocean, long drive. Had a little pup tent, had a Coleman stove. And I got up there on Friday and then saw where I lived on Saturday. And then I had to start back on Saturday evening. I came to a spot on the one right beside the ocean, way up on a mountain. I just pulled my car over and put my pup tent up, and I went to sleep. And California Highway Patrol came up, and he said, "Hey, can you come out a second?" I came out. He said, "You okay?" I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." I told him what I was doing. He said, "You really from West Virginia, aren't you?" He said, "Well, there's a lot of people get killed out on this road. Be careful around here." I said, "I will." Got up the next morning, drove on home. It was the best days of my life. By yourself, traveling up Route 1 at the most gorgeous piece of properties in the world. I loved it. I boogie boarded, learned to surf, had just to work construction. That's go to work, surf, party, do it all over again. So it was a fun time. And then after I did it for 2 years, and then Mom called me and she said, "Hey, I miss getting to talk to you." And Mom was a manufacturer's representative when women weren't supposed to be a manufacturer's representative. That was a man's job. She didn't care. She wasn't supposed to be on the band boosters. She ended up being the president of the band boosters. I mean, you don't tell my mama that she couldn't do something, because Mom would run over top of you to get there.
Eventually, Tommy's time in California came to an end, and the West Virginia boy returned home.
Got back, ended up working for Mom for a little while. I was 21 at a time when most people my age were making 25 grand. I was making 50 grand, a company car. I was driving around to different electrical distributors and doing different things. And Carbide, Union Carbide worldwide, was the engineering capital of the world. And it was also known as the chemical capital of the world. My mom said, "Well, somebody got a problem." And she said, "Well, Chernobyl went down. Carbide had to cut off purchasing, and they had to cut off purchasing of light fixtures, cable tray, all the stuff for 3 years. And I said, "Well, can we get a loan from the bank?" She said, "I already tried." She said, "Son, you're going to have to find another job." I went down to Canal City. I walked into a recruiting office, was looking at the Air Force stuff, and a Marine came around the corner. He said, "Hey, buddy, looks like you're ready to be a United States Marine." And I said, "Well, looks like you may be right." So I went back, I talked to him, I took the test, did everything they needed me to do, and I joined the United States Marine Corps. You would think in the Marine Corps that I went to all these different countries, and actually it was the West Virginia Air National Guard that I went to every place. But in the Marine Corps, I went to Camp Lejeune, finished up infantry training school, went over to Courthouse Bay and finished up combat engineer school. After I finished up combat engineer school, I went to demolitions expert school with my gunnery sergeant, became a demolitions expert. That was on the road. Marine Corps sent me to cold weather training, desert training, jungle warfare training. I went through 4 or 5 different types of training that Marines need to be ready for. And then when I got back, they sent us out on leave after being out in the snow for 8 weeks at minus 30 degrees. They gave us 4 days leave. You don't send 200 Marines out into a town when they've been in 8 foot of snow. There was an all-girls college in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Lisa Folks, I'll never forget her. Her and 7 of her girlfriends met them. They ended up saying, "Hey, where are you going from here?" I said, "Well, I'm going back to Camp Lejeune, and then I'm getting ready to go home for 3 weeks." And they said, "Were you coming to Daytona for spring break?" I said, "Well, guess I could." So I got back to cold weather training, did all that, got home, told Mom and Dad I was leaving, went to Daytona Beach for 3 weeks. I cannot believe I'm around all these people. And I'm staying in Marine Corps pup tent, still got my golden set. I'm cooking breakfast every morning. And the girls from Wisconsin drive up and open my tent. Like 4 of them came in my tent and was just like, "Tommy, yeah." You know, it was what a time. What a time. It was awesome. At the end of it, in 3 weeks, I had to drive to San Diego. I was going to Marine Corps recruiter school. Mom was in sales. I was kind of around sales and got the voice for being around sales. And I'm driving to San Diego, and I've got 9 days to be ready for recruiter school. Kansas City, New Mexico, Arizona. You know the song about Arizona, flatbed Ford, slowing down. And a girl takes a look at me. Girl drove by in a flatbed Ford. I'd just finished an empty and hay and said, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm getting gas. What are you doing? She said, I just delivered hay. What are you doing tonight? And I was like, going to San Diego. Are you spending the night? What are you doing? I said, I'm just going to set up a campsite outside of town. She goes, okay, I'll come see you. And that night, that girl came to see me, flew on. I went on to San Diego the next morning, got there for recruiter school. At the end of recruiter school, there was 150 of us. I was one of the top two. And they were sending me back to Charleston, West Virginia, my hometown. So I come back home and I had to get an apartment and ended up being a recruiter in the state of West Virginia and was a number three, number two, and a number one Marine Corps Recruiter of the Year. Ended up getting three Navy achievements. Probably the proudest moment of my life is getting three Navy achievements. Navy achievements have to come from a general. They don't come easy. There was a friend of mine named Moose. While I was bouncing downtown, we had the Charleston Regatta, and I was bouncing for a couple bars, and we didn't have any trouble. Nobody messed with the guys, the Marines that took care of the place. And he said, hey, you want to do a little bit of security stuff? I said, well, I'd love to. He said, well, I'm going to put you on high end. We need to take care of some people. So a lot of country stars coming in at the time. And the first one that came in was Reba McEntire, and had to get in a limo, go to the airport. You have to make sure she has her Skittles, her Sprite. You get this little list of stuff. You have everything ready. You and the limo driver go pick them up. You take them down to the hotel. You stay with the limo. You tell them what time they need to be up front. You take them to the Civic Center. You get them in. You walk them all the way to the stage. You stay on the stage their entire concert. To keep everybody off stage, not being able to attack them, get them out of the stage, up to the airport and fly out on a limo. So I got paid like $350 every time I did that. It was in the 80s, but $350 back in was still $350. It was a lot of money. Alan Jackson. Alan was sitting in a chair and asked me for a Coke. So I went over, got him a Coke, and I turned around. And his legs were sitting out like this with his boots. His legs looked like they were 4 yards long. He was such a tall guy. And I said, is there anything I need to do? And he said, well, don't let the women on stage. And he went out on stage. He shook his butt. 400 women were trying to get on the stage. And a girl about 5 foot tall, 104 pounds, got on top of it. It was up 10 yards. She got up to the top, started running towards him. I hit her like a linebacker. I'm a big guy. I hit her. She almost got loose from me. And I threw her to the guy going down the steps the other side. All they want to do is touch Alan Jackson's butt. All right? They don't care. Aaron Tippin, Dwight Yoakam, Clint, all of them. And Willie Whalen and some boys played at Laidley Field. And there was a big rainstorm, so we had to put this 20-foot by 20-foot tarp over top of us. And they were down there drinking Jack Daniels, smoking. As soon as the storm went by, they said, fold the tarp up, and they started playing music again. So then I was in the Marine Corps, and I was at Quantico for NCO training. And one of the guys I knew in the Marine Corps was Danny Rohde. Him and his wife were stationed there. So I went over to a country bar with him, and he always liked putting his Stetson on. We went over to the bar, and I was shooting. I'd been shooting for a couple hours and hadn't been beat yet. I just loved the game of pool. I was pretty good. But I'm shooting, getting ready to shoot the money ball. And he said, Tom, you need to turn around. I said, Danny, I'm shooting a $50 money ball. Can you wait until I'm done? He goes, nope, you need to turn around. I turned around, Garth Brooks. Well, I was wanting to put my four quarters up, play game. I said, well, there's some quarters on the table. Guy said, I'm next. He can go ahead and play my game. He said, you don't mind? He said, no. He said, what are you shooting for? I said, $50, playing nine ball. And he said, playing nine ball? Okay. I broke him, ran the table, shot the nine ball in the corner, said, $50. You ready for another one? Rock him up again. He said, oh, no, I can't shoot against you. So that was Garth Brooks.
It was while he was working as a Marine recruiter that Tommy became a father. Jesse Dalton was born and became his pride and joy.
I was in the Marine Corps. I married Alma. I love being a Marine recruiter, but I was working 7 to 7. Monday through Saturday, and sometimes on a Sunday. It was 7 days a week. When Alma and I got married, we spent 3 days with each other. I got a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. And Alma and I had Jesse in 89, April 1st. Says he's born on April 1st. When I'm shooting for $50 on a nine ball, my brother came up and said, "Hey, I'm a broker water. Jesse's being born." I said, "Dude, don't do this to me. I knew it's April 1st. Don't be trying to pull that stuff." He took the nine ball and he threw it in the pocket and told the guy, he said, "Do I need to give you $50? And he says, "He's having a baby. No, you don't give me nothing. You need to get to the hospital." So she had Jesse April 1st. I said his first name was Jesse. We couldn't find a middle name. And Alma said, "How about Dalton, Pawpaw's name?" And I said, "Pawpaw's name wasn't Dalton. It was Dalton." She said, "No, that's the way your grandmother said it." And it was D-A-L-T-O-N. So anyway, love my mama and Pawpaw. Loved him to death.
After a very successful career and many awards, Tommy decided it was time to leave the Marine Corps.
I was trying to go back to the FMF, which is Fleet Marine Force, to be a demolitions expert, to go over to Iraq and start setting bombs or giving the Navy SEALs or commandos and all the Black Ops guys doing all their demo and giving them a bag to take with them. And they said, "No, you have to become a permanent recruiter or seek employment elsewhere." I said, "Have a good day. Put me on terminal leave. I'm getting out of the Marine Corps." I walked out of the office, never went back. When I got out of the Marine Corps in 90, I joined the West Virginia Air Guard. They had never been deployed in 40 some years. Well, I got there and we had to go to Dover, Delaware. And that was Desert Shield, Desert Storm back in 90, 91. We spent 7.5 months in Dover, Delaware, McGuire, as a cargo specialist on the cargo planes, like the C-5 Galaxy, the biggest cargo plane in the world, the C-130, the smallest cargo plane in the world. And we loaded them with gear and troops, sent them off. And then we got cargo and stuff back. So we were constantly loading, unloading, getting things prepared to shove onto the planes and all that. I had two wars, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Iraqi Freedom in 03, and I had three skirmishes. But I've been in 22 different countries. Some of the prettiest places I ever been was Guam and Mogadishu. Been to Hawaii 3 times, Turkey, Japan, Kuwait, all over Europe to give people water, MREs, food, toothpaste, and just unload a cargo plane with all this stuff. Here you go. Then the crew would have to rest for a day or two. Then we'd get on the plane, drive away. Those were all fun stories, but I've been in 22 different countries. Or we flew with the Navy SEALs miniature subs because somebody had to make sure that we loaded those subs properly, we unloaded them properly, because if anything gets damaged, the Navy is going to say, "Okay, the Air Force has to pay for us a new sub," and they're $20 million a piece. And I always say, don't ever thank the guy or gal from the military. We had a blast. You need to thank the families. They had to pay the bills. They had to do the real work. We were joking and smoking, but it just the way it was. And Alma was in the Air National Guard becoming an officer. So Alma had to finish her bachelor's. Then she went after her master's and then her PhD. So even though she was in the military and doing this stuff, she was away a lot doing those. So now I'm in the Air Guard part-time. And when I'm in the Air Guard, I was able to do those things between my civilian job of building houses, construction, working for Superior Windows, doing different jobs. I was able to do a lot.
Tommy's divorce led him to a very important period of self-reflection and personal growth.
We got divorced when he was 8. The best healing power for anybody is to talk about things. Went through so much. You think, United States Marine, I'm number one. Nobody can replace me. You're on this high. And I was a verbal abuser. And from my counseling, I learned so much about where it came from. She didn't deserve it, you know. So she didn't want to reconcile. Her mom loved me so much. She paid for my counseling for 9 months with this guy that was, what a dude, Bob Jones. I'll never forget this guy the rest of my life. I still have all this stuff in a grenade box, a Marine Corps grenade box, all in my closet in there. if anybody ever needs to find out how I get normal again. He was from the Bronx. After becoming a pastor, he saw the biggest problem in the church was the people in the church. Men beating women, women cheating on their husbands, all the stuff going on. He got his PhD in family counseling, and he is now head of Duke's family counseling group. Only God knows how much I love that guy. And it's hard for some of us as little boys from Sissonville. Your mom and dad yell, your older brother yells, everybody yells. It's okay to yell. And I guess when you get mad and you take Jack Daniels, United States Marine Corps, working all the time, and you start putting all this stuff together, and then that was no good. You're just like talking about abusers, and all that came up. We talked about all that. And one of the things I learned is nobody deserves to be yelled at. He said, you had a Marine Corps K-bar. And I said, yeah. He said, would you bring it next week? Because I had to meet with him every Tuesday. If he wanted to go 4 hours, we're staying there 4 hours. And I had to do my homework. If I didn't do my homework, don't come. And brought the K-bar. And we're sitting in chairs about 3 feet apart. And he opened the K-bar and pulled it out. And it's sharp. You can shave with it. And it's a knife about yay long. And he said, what do you do with this knife? I said, well, there's 101 different ways to kill a man with that weapon. And he said, I want you to think about something for a second. Close your eyes. Close my eyes. And he said, slowly, whenever you feel you're ready, open your eyes. Open my eyes. He went, ah. I went, whoa, 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 whoa. He goes, now, Marine, don't kill me. Don't kill me. He said, you felt scared you were? And I said, yeah. And he said, do you know that a knife can cut you? We can put stitches in it. It'll go away. He said, when you yell at a person, and you hurt a person, it could stay there for a week, for a year, for the rest of their lives. Having a dad that, when you say verbal abuse and sexual abuse, different category, but having a son under a child abuser, 62% chance. Now, that may have changed over the past 20 years. 62% chance that son would have a chance of becoming a child abuser. Now, think of this. And he said, but you said you had two brothers. And he sat there for a second and he went, astronomical. So we beat it. So yeah, it's tough to talk about that subject. Yeah, it's tough getting into it, but I always lean on the part, how do you heal? I heal by telling you that. We beat it. You know what I mean? I yelled for a few years and drank too much Jack Daniels. And I guess we all have to go through what we have to get through to get ourselves to a point that we know we are better. I had to learn that Tommy Young had to be a good person before I could meet somebody else. And then that's when I said, well, I'm not going to the bars. I don't want to meet women that way again. I'm not going through all this again. I started reading my Bible and taking Jesse.
For Tommy, there's nothing more important in his life than being a dad to Jesse.
Alma went her separate ways and I kept the house. And the pool, I spent a lot of time with Jesse, going to ball games, making sure that he was getting everywhere he needed to be. And 8 or 9 boys would come over and play in our pool on weekends and stuff. I just had a blast. I just sat on the deck, drank a margarita or something with a buddy of mine. His son was there, James Lawson. We'd just sit back and watch them dunk each other in the pool. And after a while, they would dunk each other and they wouldn't come up. And James like, you think we should say anything? And I said, nah. And then Jesse would come up and say, I held my breath for 2 minutes. I told you I could do it, James. You know, you would think they were really trying to drown each other, but it was fun times. But then at a certain point at 13, Jesse told me that his mom was getting remarried and they were going to move to South Carolina. He wanted to go with her. Didn't really like that, but he wanted to go down there and get started in high school, 9th through 12th grade in the same high school. And glad I did. He got to be the valedictorian of the class at a high school with like 3,000 students. Jesse is just the bomb. He is so freaking smart. Now, I was still in West Virginia. I didn't get to take you fishing. Didn't get to take you hunting. Didn't get to teach you how to drive. Didn't get to do nothing. So, yeah. Missed those times. Now, I went to, during a war effort, Iraqi Freedom. I think it was at Charleston Air Force Base for 3.5 months. So he lived in Aiken, South Carolina. So I could drive up the road, had 2 days off, go to folk ball game, watch him play the drums, take him out to have meals, had a few short hours, and get to hug him and kiss him. I mean, that's the one thing that I loved out of anything, is getting to hug him and kiss him. I have to be honest with this. I was hard on my son. I raised him hard. But I know he can take care of his wife. I know he can take care of his kids. And I know there's probably nobody in the state of South Carolina that can whip him.
Eventually, this period of growth and self-reflection led Tommy to meet the woman of his dreams, Stella.
We were building schools. I worked for a school building authority. I was at Kanawha County Schools, and I'm talking to one of the assistant superintendents. And I looked out the window, and there was a real pretty blonde, brown-headed girl walking to her car. I said, "Well, Chuck, who is the beautiful babe getting into the BMW?" And he said, "That would be Miss Stella." So the secretary set us up, and we met each other. And that was Monday. I just finished reading my Bible on Sunday. So again, yes, there was Party Central. Yes, there's pieces of Tommy that did certain things, but there was always a piece of me that had the good Lord in the back of my head going, "You know, this isn't going to look good. You know that good Lord's going to be asking you about this one day." And I knew all that, but I don't hide from the good Lord. I have a personal relationship with the Lord. I give him the good, the bad, the ugly. Here it is. Try to keep me in your good wits if you can, and I'd appreciate it, but I understand if you can't. But she was brought to me for a purpose by the good Lord. And now 25, 26 years later, here's where we're at. She could do anything. She could mow the grass, put the deck back together. I'll kick dinner a little bit. "No, don't you do that. I'm doing that Saturday." She didn't need me. Yeah, she was beautiful. That wasn't what I was looking for. It was like, what else? And when I saw that in that first few, 2 or 3 weeks we were together, and then over that next summer, because I met her during Valentine's Day of 99, and I proposed to her in December 31st of 99, 2000, and then we got married in Jamaica, July 25th, 2000. But she was married before. We didn't want to put anybody else having to put out money for us. We wanted to do it for us, and it was awesome. They got the prettiest flowers known to man. You don't even have to order flowers. You stand up against the side of the building and there's birds of paradise and everything under the sun. But yeah, just get away.
The rest of Tommy's career took some unexpected twists and turns.
At the end of my career, ZMM Architects and Engineers laid me off. And after I got laid off, the director of the West Virginia Lottery, John Myers, so uncanny. He lives by me. I'm out blowing leaves with my steel backpack blower. He pulls up and he says, "Hey, I understand you left EMM." I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'd like to come talk to me about directing the lottery with me." I said, "Really?" Been without work for 2 weeks. I'd never taken unemployment and went up and started working for him. Worked for him for a few years. I worked day like dark. I mean, it was work Saturdays. Now, I did a lot of fun stuff. You were taking lottery players to meet the coaches of the basketball team at West Virginia University and meeting the players of the football team and all this fun stuff. But it wasn't for me. It was for them. And then Dr. Steve Payne was the superintendent of schools. He was with the governor. They both called me on the phone. He said, "Hey, I need you to come take over my transportation and school facilities director job at the State Department of Education." I said, "Steve, I'm happy at the lottery." And he said, "Well, I got the governor with me, Jim Justice. He's a senator in Congress right now." And Jim said, "Tommy, I think we need your leadership." Everybody always wants the Marines' leadership, right? But they don't want to keep you. They want you to come in, do the work for them, get everything straightened out, fire, hire, get the team together, and then they want to bring somebody else in to do it, right? So they bring you in to be the hatchet man. And so I did that, went to the State Department. And during the State Department, I had like 560 hours of sick leave. And I had all kinds of hours in annual leave. And in 2020, they shut everything down in the nation. And I had COVID. And then right when we were going to go back halftime to the State Department of Education, June 13th, 2020, I had a stroke.
Suffering a stroke would be devastating for most people, but in true Tommy fashion, he has remained positive throughout his recovery.
Everybody always says, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry you had a stroke. And I'm like, it's a blessing. And they don't understand why it's a blessing. As soon as I went into my stroke and I couldn't move, you hear everybody, you're thinking everything's fine. You can't move. You can't talk. You can't do anything. And Stella was like, oh my God, Tom, what is going on? She calls 911, gets an ambulance there in like 4 minutes. But in my mind, the Lord spoke to me. And he said, keep your eyes centered on me, centered on Christ. And you're going to go through a long year or two of some pain, but you're going to be all right. I would have looked around. I would have said, Stella, who just said that to me? All I can tell you, it wasn't my dad. It wasn't my brother. It wasn't a coach. It wasn't a drone instructor from Paris Island. It wasn't any of those people. Such a blessing, because you always walk around and you think you have a strong belief in Jesus Christ. And are you a Christian? Yeah, I'm a Christian. But after that, I started thinking about that and I was like, are you? So my question to everybody after that was, do you believe in Jesus Christ? And they said, yes. And I said, are you sure? I tell them about my story. And then the stroke, after I came back, there was a lot of rigmarole going on at State Department of Education. A lot of people doing things they shouldn't be doing that I worked for. I was two steps from the governor. So I've always looked at that as I'm where I needed to be. I was making really good money. Man, you're making 100 grand and you got a high school education. You know, I did something right. And then the school building authority who I'd worked for previous 10 years said, I need your leadership down here. Took a pay cut and everything. And I was doing okay. But I fell down some steps. I broke my left shoulder. I was off balance, didn't know it. Thought I could do everything again, and I couldn't. So past 5 or 6 years have been a true learning experience as to how far can I go? Can I walk that far? If I can, I go. If I can't, I say I can't do this. So it doesn't bother me anymore. About 2 years ago, the guys in my fantasy football team, WV Marine, West Virginia Marine, we're getting ready to do our draft. I said, well, hold on a second. Y'all got to give me the second so I know which ones to mark off. And one of my friends said, oh my gosh, he's pulling out the stroke card again. And he came over and hugged me. He said, man, I'm sorry. I said, no, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. He said, you're smiling. And he said, yeah, he ain't mad, Chuck. And I was like, Chuck, I get it, man. You're exactly right. But they all wait on me. They're like, hey, Tom, did you get that one? Yeah, I got it. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Just because I'm 50 seconds slower than you doesn't mean that I need to say, hey, wait on me. They wait on me anyway. People start to get a little upset. Well, do you not understand what I'm trying to tell you? Well, listen, it's not you. I had a stroke a few years ago. Be patient with me. Oh, okay. And then people calm back down again. So sometimes you have to bring it up. It was a whirlwind to go through to get where I'm at today. And wasn't for Stella, I wouldn't be here. There's no way. She'd do everything for me. It's tough being a dad, being a husband, being a United States Marine, and you can't do anything for yourself. It's tough, but that's okay. My friends in the fantasy football have been such a pick-me-up from where I was in my stroke to where I am today.
Tommy has some amazing stories and great memories from his life, but his favorite memories include his son, daughter-in-law, and their two boys.
I always played games with Jesse. When we played April 1st jokes all the time. Well, he's finally gotten pretty good. He doesn't get April Fooled anymore. But when Jesse called me and they said, hey, there's a couple things we need to talk to you about. He said, well, remember we told you we weren't going to get married and weren't going to have any kids. I said, yeah. They said, well, nobody knows this part yet, but I'm pregnant and we're going to Iceland to get married. I said, what? You're doing what? What a beautiful freaking place. They got married to Faroe Islands and they had Jack Bennett. I was there for when Jack Bennett was born, Jack Bennett Young. I was there for Jack's birthday. He's a little over two. And then the next time they said, hey, we got a something else we want to talk to you. We're pregnant again. I said, oh my God, no, we're just joking. Well, they hung up the phone. And then like a week later, they called back and Lizzie said, Tom, you remember that phone call we made? She said, it wasn't April Fool's. I said, you got to be kidding me. We're pregnant again. And she said, boy, girl. I said, girl. They said, no, it's a boy. Theodore is Teddy. Theodore Dalton got Pawpaw's middle name like Jesse Dalton. And I really appreciated that. And so being able to be a part of their life and having somebody like Lizzie that keeps me in tune to what's going on, because I can't drive down there by myself. And so somewhere around spring break in March, we're going to go down and spend about a week or so with Jesse and Teddy. But if nothing else, the one thing I take away from it is I raised a strong man, and I'll take the blame for it because I have no worries that he can't take care of Lizzie and Jack and Ted. They're in good shape. And Lizzie's always got heads up over him anyway because Lizzie gave me two grandsons that carry on my name. So anything Lizzie wants, Lizzie gets. Jesse, you don't talk to me about it, so go have a seat. Go have a seat. I've been very lucky. I've been around during some very special times. Coming from where I came from, getting made fun of because I spelled my name backwards. I couldn't read, to graduating from high school, becoming a United States Marine, to being 65. And my son has done so well, and bless his wife and kids. And the Lord has blessed me with Stella. It wasn't what was in my dreams when I was growing up at 16 years old. I didn't think I was going to make it to the year 2000. But you look at it now and you take life as a whole, and the people, you thought you knew a lot of people, but once you lose the job, you lose the credit card, and you got three friends when you used to know everybody, I know where I stand. And if you don't like me, that's fine. If you don't like me because I'm too loud, then I won't be around you. It doesn't, nothing matters like that anymore the way it used to. The only thing that's missing is my social life. With the military disability and with the disabilities from a stroke, I'm cut down a notch. I have a lot of noise in my head. It's really, really, really loud. I'd love to spend more time with my son, his beautiful wife, Lizzie, and my grandbabies. I've got paintball guns. I've got toys. I've got Tonka toys. I mean, they're not even ready for it yet, and I'm already ready. When they get older, I got all the hunting guns they need. I've got everything that they need to go deer hunting or anything that they want to do. And I just wish them the best. But yeah, it's all good. I'm good to be where I'm at. I remember where I'm from. I remember who I am. And I remember my name and my word mean something.
As you've heard, Tommy's come through some major adversities in his life. But throughout it all, he has had faith in Jesus and worked hard to become the best version of himself. From growing up in West Virginia to rubbing shoulders with rock stars to holding high positions of power in his career, Tommy has remained consistent in his kindness and positive attitude. A huge thank you to Tommy Young for being interviewed and for making this episode possible. If there's someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email us at hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website, hearingourheritage.com.